on, he's your doctor, yeah, so come on down, cause God can't use you till you come on down. While I lent her a hand on Sunday morning, fixing a fitting breakfast, we'd sing and praise and welcome cousins who'd come over and eat and truly break the fast on that small dining table she got on sale at Sears and Roebuck. Laughing and loving each other, fellowshipping in Liberty City, deaf to the sirens that chased Pookie and them down the Ave, not paying much mind to the crackheads on the gate by the park, burning crack rocks near the bushes, because it was only kinfolks in full devotion. Before we were even dressed to attend a place of worship, I'd love Sunday mornings in Liberty City, even if Granny woke me up too early because I went to the school dance the night before. Oh, I didn't want to go to church because I'd much rather spend my day watching TV, eating Frosted Flakes, and talking on the phone with Kina. Something about early Sunday morning made Granny feel good. Like the kind of good you feel when you've got to stop, pay attention, and thank God for the whole lot, even down to the sand under your feet. And knowing that I believed in goodness. So I'd wake up, wash my face, brush my teeth, hum a tune or two. Oh, oh, come on down. Oh, come on down. Make sure there was a slice of cheese on my grits. Get all dressed up in my best and kiss my pretty granny and let Mrs. Jones know how beautiful she was almost 1,000 times. Before we parade out of the door and have Uncle Donald drop us off to Liberty Christian Church on Sunday morning. I used to love Sunday morning in Liberty City. No other day compares. Yeah.
That's it for Sprouts. Today's show was produced by Liz Strait. Poetry Is can be heard on WMNF Tampa every Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Join us next week for another edition of Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with, at 7 p.m., special guest from Berkeley, phone-in Julia Vinograd, poet extraordinaire. Stay tuned.
Round like a circle that is forming, made of television ads. More and more I see the warning of conditions I might have. I have countless new disorders that have finally been revealed. I have dry eyes, spastic bladder, and that one with Sally Field. I take drugs for every syndrome. I'm like a powder keg. When I kick my spouse at bedtime, now I claim it's restless leg. If your health is in decline, just take 10 pills and you're fine. Like the lithium I'm taking with a dose of estrogen, mixed with Demerol and Prozac, now I've got hair on my chin. Son's on Ritalin and Bextra. We thought he had ADD, but it turns out that the whole time he is just an SOB. I need Ambien Lunestra to help me sleep all right, cause Levitra and Cialis keep my husband up all night. If your life's as bad as mine, at least 10 pills come to mind. Lasix, Gruex, Metamucil, Celebrex, and Neprosin. Then I take a few Vitorin that I wash down with some gin. Now my ears are always ringing. I think Lipitor's to blame. There's no reason that I take it. I just really like the name. I mix lidocaine with highballs, and the side effects were queer. I was hearing through my eyeballs, and I'm tasting through my rear. And that giant nose of Clemerton is something I must try. And I take ginkgo biloba, but can't remember why. So I quit those pills cold turkey. It was all a big mistake. And I swear there is no supplement or medicine I'll take. And though lately I have found, though depressed and feeling down, thanks to Botox, I can't frown.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, as usual, it's a tough time, not only here in the homeland, but also interglobally. I've been monitoring all kinds of situations. For starters, there's Iran. Turns out Iran does not have the weapons we thought they did. But there still is the issue of Iranian uranium. I don't even know if that's really an issue. I just like trying to say it. Besides Iran, there's also the situation in Pakistan. I've been watching that closely. President Musharraf has been responsible for suspending the Constitution, interfering with elections, and packing the Supreme Court with presidential loyalists. But he's done some bad things, too. I've also been focusing on the Middle East. I just got back from a trip over there. While I was in the Middle East, I visited the Straits of Hormuz. And to prove that I'm an open-minded president, next time I go, I intend to visit the gays of Hormuz. Making it part of my mandate. But people say, Mr. President, don't you think you focus too much on things like the Middle East and not enough on other countries like Africa? And I say, well, what's going on in Africa? And they say, Mr. President, aren't you concerned about elephant poaching? And I got to say, not really. There's got to be tastier ways to cook them. And it raises my stress levels when I feel like Americans don't trust me. I worry about my health. You may remember a few months ago I had a medical procedure called a colonoscopy. Because I had to have some polyps removed from my colon. And I was hoping the American people would understand two things from this experience of mine. One is that it is possible to have a messy and unwanted invasion go successfully. And two, I was hoping the Democrats would finally realize I do not have my head up there. And I worry about other things too, like my legacy. How will I be remembered? Every president is remembered for something specific. For example, Ronald Reagan. Morning in America. Franklin Roosevelt, Jobs. Richard Nixon, going to China. But with me, you get all three. Every morning in America, Jobs are going to China. And people think I don't understand things. You know, they make fun of me. They make all these jokes, and they think I don't understand the jokes. Why are there so many jokes about George Bush and how I mangle my words? I just might have a plan to promote Kurdistan, but it comes out, hey, how about them Kurds? I think things real smart, then I just brain fart. And Putin, well, I called him Pooty Poot. Someday I'll find it, the brain-mouth connection. and I'll learn to be elocute. Da 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 dee da da da. I hope someday I just might talk good. I'm not dyslexic, I just hail from Texas, a whole nother state than Baghdad. And when I said stay the course, I meant to say can't get worse. And mission accomplished? Well, my bad. Some folks don't know I'm Yale edumacated, but we intellectuals agree. Our government has three branches, they tell me. There's Congress, Dick Cheney, and me. America.
And that was the Capitol Steps' latest album. It's actually about 6 months late now, called Campaign and Suffering. Usually pretty weak and pretty feeble and pretty centrist, but hey, it's political satire, so what do you want? Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is called Bathrop Spear's Broadsides. I'm Bathrop Spear. And for 2 hours, more or less, I'm going to be with you chatting and playing interviews from the street and interviewing poet Julia Vinograd, who's calling in from Berkeley at 7. She's a great writer, and she's frequently published in Street Spirit, a newspaper that it's getting harder and harder to find around Santa Cruz, but you can find it in the main public library. You can find it if you call HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF. We'll get you a copy. You can come to the HUFF meeting every Wednesday. We meet every Wednesday at 9:30 in the basement of the county building, and we talk about what do we do next to stop the latest crazy law coming down the pike from Mayor Ryan Coonerty of Bookshop Santa Cruz fame. You can be a part of this whole exciting process. You can actually call into the show if you want to. Call-in number here is 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you got stuff you want to talk about off-air, give me a call on the HUFF line, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you want to get in touch with the people who run the station, and that's not me, it's not my station, I'm just one of many broadcasters. You can be a broadcaster. Give a call to 427-4523, 427-4523, and you can leave a public service announcement. We'll put it on the air. You can leave us, your grandmother's inheritance or your inheritance from your grandmother. We'll spend it. You can ask a question, give an answer, give a criticism. Let us know how great you think we are, whatever you'd like. 427-4523 for the Free Radio or Freak Radio voicemail line. And if you want to actually get on the air yourself, you need to apply. You can do that by going to the website, www.freakradio.org. So, let's begin with some street interviews. Let's see. Now, perhaps even before that, I should say we had a successful little kind of get-together a couple hours ago, SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, or Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, SAFE, S-A-F-E, depending on who you talk to. It's called different things by different people. That's the group that every Wednesday and then I guess every Tuesday, more recently, has been out there in front of New Leaf Market, feeding people, playing music, taking back the public spaces which were seized so cavalierly by the city council, the merchants, downtown association, police department, you name it, in a whole series of restrictive laws setting up forbidden zones, move-alongs, and so forth. Where we previously thought there were public sidewalks, we now learn that no, it's you can pay for a piece of it if you want to buy a piece of it as a merchant, or you can follow the orders of your friendly local police officer. Anyway, I'm going to play some street interviews. What we did, though, before the show is we did some discussion of some recent police encounters that we had, or I should say SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, had at their Tuesday meeting, their Tuesday play-along, sing-along. They found police were attempting to move them along, blaming them for drunks in the area or smokers or rowdy people, and suggesting that their relatively gentle and genteel music was responsible, which, of course, is absurd. I understand the police were nice about it, but they were attempting to change the use of the public space based upon the fact that some people apparently were engaging in illegal activity. And, of course, my response to that is go after people engaging in illegal activity. Don't penalize everybody. That's sort of the Ryan Coonerty approach. You know, if you find a problem in a parking lot, make it illegal for everyone to be there any time of the day or night unless they're parking a vehicle, and then only for 15 minutes. Run everybody out. I don't believe in that approach. I think it's kind of the antithesis of what we want here in Santa Cruz and what I guess some say they want in the United States. Kind of like the police fencing off the beaches on the 4th of July and busting people for drinking and fireworks, things of that sort. All, of course, for our own protection, of course. So, I keep wanting to get to these interviews, but I also keep wanting to talk about this beginning of a sort of an understanding of what the laws are all about downtown. And they aren't good laws. They were bad laws that were set up by Downtown Association and merchant shills like Candy Jackson, formerly of Jackson's Shoes, now of the Measure K committee, the kind of ringers who were appointed to destroy the committee, in my view. That's the committee that's supposed to make marijuana sales, use, cultivation, etc., for recreation in private, the lowest police priority. But in fact, the police are keeping their records closely guarded, so you don't get to see, and more important, the committee that's supposed to be overseeing them doesn't get to see what's happening. Something that Mike Rotkin apparently thinks is just fine. His appointee on the committee, Anita Henry, has been trying to do something about it, and not getting very far, particularly since the committee only meets twice a year now. The city council is unwilling to let it meet in a more reasonable number of times. A couple of points of note in the last few days. Craig Canada, previously homeless and busted for sleeping outside and for smoking medical marijuana, which he has well documented he uses for various conditions, was arrested for use of medical marijuana outside in one of the areas right outside, I guess it's McPherson Square or whatever it's called, the McPherson Center, the museum area outside in one of the little alleyways there. Apparently he had to leave his room where he had to clean up. They had to clean the room. He needed to medicate. He went out to medicate. And officers Sims and Forbes decided that in this town, a letter from a doctor isn't sufficient. A ticket isn't sufficient, apparently, but they have to handcuff him and take him to jail. And he had to bail himself out with a $100 bail, $1,000 bond. $1,000 bail, I guess, $100 bond. And in a charge that won't go anywhere in court because what jury is going to convict a medical marijuana patient for using medical marijuana medicinally? It's outrageous. And it's an example of how out of control or uneducated or just abusive our police department is toward the people it decides to target, like Craig Canada. Craig is not always the most mellow fellow. He recently had a trial for, he was assaulted. He tried to complain to the police, and the police instead charged him with assault and took him to jail and didn't take his complaint of assault. And the jury didn't buy it, and it hung, and he made a deal that it put off the issue for a year, and now he's going to probably go back to court because he doesn't want to have the whole thing hanging over his head for a year. So if some cop does what just happened yesterday, he gets busted, then he suddenly finds himself in trouble with the law for engaging in what is essentially legal behavior. If the police don't like it in Santa Cruz, then I guess it's illegal, right? That's the class war in action here in Santa Cruz. Also heard that CJ Stock, the musician, was arrested yesterday. I don't quite know for what. If anybody has any details, I'd like to hear about it. Cosmic Chris is reportedly fighting a musician ticket for playing music downtown on Pacific Avenue, even though he moved at the request of the officers involved. Again, I'm talking about second-hand information I got from someone who spoke with Chris. And again, we had this kind of workshop discussion today about what the laws are, what your rights are as a street performer on Pacific Avenue. I'm interested in having us talk more about that, understand that more clearly. I don't think, you know, I think it's important for all people to try to respect the rights of everybody. I mean, that's really what the issue is. But you can't have a heckler's veto around musicians. You can't have one person who can close down a musician because she or he doesn't like that performer. That's not the Santa Cruz way or spirit, and it's also not fair. I mean, I understand it puts a burden on some merchants who are kind of stuck in the position they're in, hearing the same performer. There used to be the street performers' guidelines, which, as far as I know, worked very well. If you didn't like any performer, if you wanted their spot for some reason, you asked them to move, and after an hour there was kind of a voluntary agreement they would. This whole thing was destroyed by Ed Porter's move-along law, which he and Emily Riley and the city council cooked up in 2002, which made the move-along mandatory. And, of course, it's not really mandatory, as we've found by investigating the ordinance, and nor should it be. But the whole idea of people voluntarily cooperating is being lost in the idea that the ongoing reality that merchants can get whatever the hell they want, whenever they want it, from whatever cops they want it from. Now, I say this, and perhaps I should qualify it, because I've got to be honest, I saw an incident a couple of days ago where an angry merchant from Eco Goods came out of that Eco Goods next to New Leaf, and was denouncing a bunch of people who were smoking, I don't know, over near the curb, about 15 or 20 feet away from their store. I'm not sure what the actual rule is on smoking in terms of Pacific Avenue. I know some people want to make it completely illegal. But the cops did come, and they kind of chatted with people. But they acknowledged that they don't enforce no smoking rules downtown at all. I guess except for Craig Canada and smoking medical marijuana discreetly behind a building when he wants to medicate. I guess they do enforce that. Really outrageous. So the merchant didn't get her way in this matter. So sometimes merchants don't get their way, and I think that's important to be real and factual and accurate about what happens. But it just really seems to me that the laws downtown are pretty tailored for merchant activity. Donna Dice, the woman whose arm was broken, 60-year-old woman who lives in her vehicle, a disabled woman, whose arm was broken by Sergeant Lamas, apparently on a drug hunt. He didn't find any drugs. He did charge the police department 3 days later, charged her with marijuana possession, but then removed the charge, again, the disappearing charge. All she's charged with now is resisting arrest, though the underlying charge is not clear anymore. There is no underlying charge. And you get a lot of ignorant, bigoted people on the Sentinel website, trolls, I call them, ranting and raving about how wonderful the police are and how bad Adonna Dice and the activists are for trying to expose what seems to be pretty obvious police misconduct by Sergeant Lamas, breaking an elderly woman's arm in a marijuana bust that didn't involve any marijuana. Actually, it involved her not wanting to talk to the officer, to the sergeant. And that it then becomes the basis for the sergeant's using excessive force, and then becomes the further basis for a cover-up by the police department of the whole thing. Thank you, Captain Clark. He's the head of IA, or was. Not good, and something we have to fight, and something that has to be exposed, and the higher we raise the temperature on this issue, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, the better. There are those who say, oh, we just have to sit down and have a little powwow with the police and everybody can all be friends, you know. You know, really, I wish that were true. The fact is, power, as Frederick Douglass so clearly put it back in the 1800s, concedes nothing without a demand. And you have to have power to get listened to. And the power that we have on the streets and in the community is people standing up to these, you know, I have to call them thugs with badges and guns. Not because I don't like Officer Forbes or Officer Sims. They're actually very considerate to me. We have pleasant conversations. But the kind of behaviors they exhibit when they go after people alone, they're like predators. They prey on people like Craig Canada. And I can't understand how they would either be so subservient or so arrogant or so oblivious to basic constitutional rights that they would allow this to happen. But I guess it does happen, and I have to, you know, call them out for it. I apologize. Officers, if I've got some facts wrong here, I would love to hear about it. Perhaps I will. We can talk about it then. Street performers, if you're being harassed downtown. Campers, if your property is being taken. Folks, if you're being told in the parks you haven't got a right to be there. Bicyclists, if you're being hassled for safe behavior on a bike, or that is perhaps technically illegal, like going the wrong way on Pacific Avenue, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about ways of changing these police practices through a combination of public education, exposure, small claims court, lawsuits, pressure on the shitty council, you name it. We need to talk about it. 423-HUFF is the call-in number off air. And if you want to talk on the air about this issue, hopefully we have a working phone line. I don't know. I haven't seen a phone light flash on or heard a jingle. 427-3772 is the number here in the studio. 427-FRSC. Let's hear a little street talk.
Well, it is about, what time is it? About 11:30 on July 5th. We're talking with
Christine.
And Christine, you said that you observed a number of police officers doing what, when, and how, and what?
Well, see, it happened a couple of days ago, and they were sort of passing by. It was, I think, the night before last night, so the 3rd of July. So people were already going a little bit nuts, and there were still big bangs and cracks and, you know, different kind of weird noise in the street. So the cops are passing by constantly, like every five to 10 minutes. And the
Where was this?
Time they came by, this is from New Leaf on Pacific Avenue. Mm-hmm. And they're passing by with their flashlights, and they're really shining in people's face.
About 10 o'clock at night, or?
No, before that, it was like 9 o'clock. It was early, actually. It was kind of early. And so this guy's shining the light in all these people's faces, and they do not appreciate it. And, of course, they express themselves. And there they go, hey, how you doing? All right. And
you're waving at the police?
Yeah. And so, you know, and of course, someone cusses. Someone says, "Is that really necessary?" You know, they're really bothered. And so, you see what I'm saying? Crazy noises. Just, it doesn't even matter if it's the 4th of July. Before or after.
5th of July, yeah.
Right, it's the next day. So, so the cops, like, zoom around the corner because this guy's cussing, right? This must be some kind of conflict or something. I don't know what they thought. But all of a sudden, there's like five or six of them, and they're flashing their lights on everybody.
In front of New Leaf Market.
Everybody's getting up. Yeah, there's at least 45, 50 people just hanging out, you know what I mean? Just hanging out. And, you know, not minding their own business, not really hurting anybody.
Scene down there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can have people on the street, you can have people in their homes everywhere. But so it was just ridiculous. I mean, we still had, you know, the 10 o'clock drum circle to look forward to, and they just ruined everything and kicked everybody out. They were like, all right, time to move, blah, blah, blah. It's like, what are you doing? We're not doing anything.
You know, I mean,
they're ones that started shining their flashlights.
Why did they say people had to move? Did anybody say, well, actually, I'm in a public space and I intend to just continue to stand here, officer. You move along if you'd like, or maybe we can chat.
Honestly, as soon as I saw one of them at the corner getting closer to me and then another one behind him, I decided to move myself. I was like, that's enough.
And then
there was five or six of them in the end, so I just knew that was going to happen. So
did everybody move?
Oh, yeah.
45 people moved because five police officers.
I came back afterwards, actually, because my bike was left there. I left my bike locked up to the gate that they were nearby. And I actually saw it, like, I was unlocking my bike, and I looked kind of over, and they were just all, like, having a good time, like, just kind of huddled together, and, blah, blah, blah. And just, I don't know, it was just weird. Like, what do you, I think they enjoyed, like, just... Like,
now, were people drinking? Were people smoking marijuana?
No.
Were they lighting fireworks,
no.
Beating each other up,
no.
Screaming and
no.
Shouting? You said there was one guy who was arguing.
There was one guy who was bothered by the cop shining their big flashlight in his face. He's trying to have a conversation with the lady, actually.
Uh-huh.
And these guys are just...
So because he protested this, the police ordered everyone to move along.
Yeah.
And everyone, like a bunch of obedient puppies and guppies, everybody moved along.
Yeah, it was sort of like a voluntary thing, you know what I'm saying? They moved along, like, before they had been ordered to. But that's like, I don't know, you can't even relax in your own neighborhood is what I'm saying. Like, these guys are that, you know, is that bad?
Hey, they're there to protect you, Christine. Try to show some respect, all right?
To protect and serve you as a good citizen, like, as a guy who's going to be there to help you, and you know what I mean? If someone's lost, or if there's a little kid who's lost or found, you know what I mean? They're supposed
maybe
to
they were looking for small lost children. Have you ever thought of that? She laughs at the idea. Christine, thank you for your update, and will you stop your snickering? Anything else you want to say?
They don't have time to look for lost children. See, they are worried about the bums sleeping in the corners in the caves. They got to kick them awake because the little kids don't matter right now. There are stinky bums on the street that are causing the tourists to go away.
Well,
That's bad money.
But you're not a stinky bum, and they caused you to go away.
Yeah, I am. I am a stinky bum when I'm hanging around the stinky bums. You know,
I don't smell anything, I got to tell you. You better try a little harder.
I know, right? I need something to do.
Whoa, thank you.
And just a comment about this phenomenon where the police arrive and people scatter and disappear. Some people may have, who knows, contraband substances. Others may have warrants. Others just may not want to be in the area when the police start running around, asking them questions, checking IDs and so forth. Which they have no right to do, by the way, unless there's reasonable suspicion that somebody is engaging in criminal behavior. They're the suspect in some kind of a crime, which I doubt 45 people were suspects in. But they were still dispersed from the area. You know, one wants to be fair. If a police officer is actually investigating some real problem, a rape, an assault, a robbery, I don't know, a case of an illegal invasion of a country, who knows, a war crime. I don't think our police officers actually would get into that, unfortunately. But if they're investigating something real, I'd like to think that the citizenry would be helpful, or that one wouldn't criticize the police for stopping to deal with situations of reasonable suspicion and probable cause. And I think it's important to remember that could always be a situation. Whenever I see cops stopping people on the street, I try to at least allow for the possibility that perhaps they're engaging in real police work, not just harassing someone for sitting 13 feet from a building or having a political table for an hour and 5 minutes in a certain place or, playing a song that disturbs somebody two blocks away who's particularly sensitive to music at 2 p.m. I like to think that perhaps there's some real criminal behavior happening that really merits some officer response, and that can happen. So I would encourage you, when you do stop to see potential police harassment happening, that you keep an open mind, see what the police officer is really doing. And when you see he's just running around doing warrant checks and doing ID checks and telling people that they're sitting within 48 feet of a change-making machine, that's when you raise your voice and invite other people to come over and point to the police officers and say, these armed thugs are what we're paying for overtime for. These are the reasons our facilities are getting cut back so we can pay these clowns to engage in this kind of abusive behavior. Yes, that's when you raise your voices and start talking that way. When they ticket six people for sitting in the shade around the corner from the restaurant near the metro, Tampico's, after having pulled out all the benches so there's no legal place for them to sit, that's when you start denouncing Officer Forbus for engaging in bullshit behavior, whether it's making a quota for a number of tickets, which he may or may not be doing, may or may not be the policy. Whatever it is, it's abusive behavior and should be called out as such. He should be held up in the pillory of public opinion for doing that kind of shit, particularly when he's doing it with a gun and a badge and frightening people and frightening other people and driving them away from the public spaces that they have a right to use. That's what I think. What do you think? 427-3772.
All right. Well, we are we're downtown here on July 5th, and it's about 6:20. I'm here observing a man next to a rose, apparently growing out of the sidewalk outside the Village Yoga. Your name, sir?
I usually introduce myself. Hi, I'm bad with names.
You are again?
I'm bad with names.
Bad with names. Well, BWN, I see you have a sign kind of written on a diamond-shaped piece of cardboard.
It's a pizza box.
Pizza box. Well, a diamond-shaped pizza box. And you've been out here soliciting funds for food. How's it going?
Well, actually, my sign says got food, not got money. I've gotten a dollar and a rose and...
No pizza.
No pizza, no food. And I'm kind of wondering, because I've been here for a good couple to maybe an hour and a half, and I'm just trying to figure out. It's like, why is it that sometimes there's much food and sometimes there's no food? And how come is it that when this aqua blue place right here is full, I don't get any food, but when it's empty, I get a lot of food? It's
just perhaps the poor people give a shit more than the well-to-do people.
The only thing that I've actually gotten to eat today was from a guy carrying a backpack, obviously homeless, a good friend of mine, and some chips.
Well, let's add to your booty by giving you a biscotti. I will open up my biscotti stash and give you one of those.
And I guess we can't hear the sound of the biscotti being munched, but let's turn to some more street interviews while we're pondering the taste of that old biscotti.
Monday, June 16th at 4:45 p.m.
Hey, Robert.
And this sounds like I'm going to have to research this a little more. I thought it was something else. My goodness. How about a musical break while I orient myself? Don't go away.
All right, class, welcome to Politics 101. Tonight's question is, who is the one whose chances were remote?
That's a tough one, a really tough one.
Who bounced back on the Super Tuesday vote?
I got it. McCain's campaign, they claimed, was down the drain.
Again?
McCain's campaign, they claimed, was down the drain.
And now I'm perplexed. What happened next?
But now McCain is plainly back again.
By John, she's got it. I think she's got it. Now how was that campaign?
Down in flames, down in flames.
And who has made great gains?
McCain, McCain, McCain's campaign. Jane is plainly back again.
Or in other words,
it's plain that the gains are mainly John McCain's.
My friends, I've got a chance, all right, and I could dance all night.
Just don't throw out your back.
You shouldn't act right wing.
Or say such crazy things.
What, like, let's stay in Iraq?
O'Reilly said that you're in bed with liberals.
And Coulter's mad enough to bite
Rush Limbaugh. Scoffs at me. If I've ticked off those three, there's quite a chance I'm right.
Oh, the thrill of the presidential race. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. That was Campaign and Suffering, Capital Steps. And you just heard McCain's campaign. So you'll hear more. Call-in number is 427-3772. On July 2nd was Donna Dice's court date. She went to court to plead not guilty to attacking Sergeant Lamas with, how would you put it, ramming her arm into his full body armor and breaking it, and then flinging herself down on the ground after ramming herself against a car, as Sergeant Lamas reportedly treated her in his investigation of God knows what, though I suspect it had something to do with reports of marijuana smoking, though again, that's not clear either. Hopefully we'll be able to read their fanciful accounts in the police reports soon and see what the police department has to say about all this. If I sound sarcastic, it's because I can't imagine any scenario, really, that would justify this kind of bullshit from the police department. And it's done with such arrogance, and it's done so matter-of-factly, and it's covered up so quickly and so speedily, and just as a matter of course, that I am sickened and angered, and hence you hear it in my voice. All these drug war activities have no legitimate basis whatsoever. And the Santa Cruz community particularly should be outraged that they're happening. But in fact, we allow the council to cripple even the measures that we send to the ballot and pass, like Measure K. So it's a depressing state of affairs. Anyway, on July 2nd, Donna went to court. She found out that she was only charged with resisting arrest. She pled, well, she got a continuance while attorneys Ben Rice and I think and Greg Coben are now looking into the case. They're interviewing witnesses, and I think they may even be soon filing some kind of a damage suit even before this whole thing gets much further, which would be rare. I don't know, actually. It's rumor right now, so I can't say what's happening. But in any case, I was there in the court corridors and ran across a few interesting events and occurrences, and I'm going to play those now.
Okay, well, we're here at the courthouse on July 2nd, or is it the 3rd, 2008, and a man who's twice tried to go through the metal detector in a sort of an outfit, a protective outfit. He's a motorcyclist. Has finally made it through, past the extensive security system involving three, count them, three deputies. And he's picking up his change. Sir, what's your name?
Van Dempsey, you know that.
And Van, what happened here?
Just the usual Nazi bullshit with security, you know.
And describe that in some detail for those who are unfamiliar with the process.
Their metal detector going off on my bike armor.
And you actually have on a sort of field armor set for. You're not a motorcyclist, you're a bicyclist, right?
I'm a motorcyclist,
as
yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
And so this protects you as you drive.
Right.
And it's It's kind of heavy. It looks like a sort of almost like scuba gear, although it's got more substance to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And have you had this problem before at this courthouse?
Oh, everywhere. I mean, it's got metal in it, and they don't know any better, and they like to assume they know better, and there's always the usual conflict.
So I'm downstairs in the preliminary to the Huff meeting on a Wednesday morning. I guess it's July 2nd. I think it's July 2nd. And I'm here with
Van Dempsey. Not here for the Huff meeting, here for something else.
Yes. Van actually came to support Donna Dice, who was arraigned today for resisting arrest in an incident where Sergeant Lamas broke her arm for unclear reasons. My sense is it was disrespecting an officer's authority, which, of course, is not a crime, but actually is a crime in the eyes of many police officers. I'll be talking about that at a later point, but Van, as a man who has been around on a number of issues, he himself has defended himself on resisting arrest charges, and I was struck with your story, Van, your description of how you were first charged with resisting arrest and then what you did to defeat that charge. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So I was first charged with resisting arrest actually about 30 days after the incident itself. Originally, it was just visiting a beach at night, being in the parking lot for all of 10 seconds, and a parking ticket and the usual harassment that comes from that. And you'll meet lecturing them that they didn't create the beach had been there for a million years, they didn't own it, et cetera, et cetera.
This was up in San Mateo?
Yeah, up in San Mateo County. And this was last August, September, August. And I read them the riot act like I usually do, and they handcuffed me like they usually do as punishment for that and held me in the back of the car for about 20 minutes as punishment. You know, just intimidation, the usual harassment, threatening me with trespassing and telling me on no uncertain terms that I'm going to jail, and me telling them, no, I'm not. You know I'm not. You're just going to hold me here in the back of your SUV prisoner for 20 minutes, trying to sweat me as usual, then you're going to let me go with a parking ticket like usual.
Now, you were with someone else.
Yeah, I had my girlfriend at the time, so I had a witness for all this, yeah. So 20 minutes later, they let me go as usual, and then I'm kind of laughing in their faces for this.
How many police were involved?
Two. Just two.
7 or 8 o'clock at night?
No, this is more like 1 a.m. And so that was the end of that. We leave, you know, I've got a parking ticket, and that's about it. Not even the trespassing. Actually, it was PC-602 trespassing was what they wrote originally, but then they dropped it a few days later in the mail to just ordinary parking ticket because they could tell that wasn't going to stick. Then a month later, I get this letter in the mail from the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office saying, I've been charged with PC-148 sub A sub 1 resisting arrest. A month later. Kind of odd, that. At that point, I'm now not only dealing with traffic court, I'm also dealing with my first, not my first criminal charge ever. First one in a while. And I go to the arraignment, I plead not guilty, and they
ask your police report.
I got a copy of the police report, but of course at the arraignment you don't have time to read it. They hand it to you and they're like, what's your charge? Like, well, what are you going to do?
Ask for a continuance.
I hadn't learned that one yet.
Right.
So I pled not guilty because it's just my way. And then I found out, once I got the police report, went home, looked through it, found out what was really going on here. I looked over it. My girlfriend looked over it. We're like, there's no resisting arrest in here ever. The police report doesn't even talk about the subject. They never talked about it that night. There was no evidence for it whatsoever. It was just something they imagined, I guess. It was punishment. So I talked to several local lawyers, just getting advice. And they all said, oh, yeah, this is just empty threats. It's bullshit. It's intimidation. All they're really trying to do is get you to cave in and, we plead guilty. I was also told by the judge when I said I'll be representing myself. And she basically told me that I was crazy and said, what'd she say? She said, you realize you're going up against a district attorney who has a law degree. He's graduated law school. And what's your level of education? And I said, I'm a proud dropout of California Junior High School. And she just looked at me for a second and then said, okay, and then allowed it. So I fought it myself. Once I looked through the police report, had other people look through it, and saw there was no basis whatsoever for this resisting arrest charge. I mean, I've been fighting and arguing with cops all of my life. I know how to toe that line. I've never actually resisted arrest, much as I'd like to, but I've never actually done it. I just bitched them out very well.
And what kind of motions did you file that made them think it was not worth the economic energy to fight you?
So after much stress and wondering, what do I do about this? Because I've never defended myself in criminal court before. I got a copy of No Low Criminal Defense and read that cover to cover, and I highly recommend it to everyone. It will clarify the legal process for you. I mean, you won't be a lawyer after reading it, but you'll at least realize what you're dealing with. And then I learned about pretrial discovery motions, and reading through the police report, it cited that they had pictures of signs, it cited that they had an audio recording on CD from the cop's lapel mic of the entire conversation, and I thought, well, there's a souvenir. I want a copy of that. I'll put that up on MySpace. I've never gotten a recording of one of my rants against the cop before. So I filed pretrial discovery motions that you're allowed to do in California, which say, please provide us with all the material evidence that you have so that we can look at it in advance so that this can be a fair trial. And they don't have to actually respond to that, but if they don't respond to it, then at the pretrial conference, you're allowed to file a motion to compel discovery, and then it takes more time, and now they have to do it. So San Mateo County actually just handed over a copy of the CD and copy of the audio recording and a copy of all the pictures. Looked them all over, listened to the recording. The recording, I then found out, was so horrible you couldn't understand anything. But I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't forced them to give me a copy of it. Otherwise, they would have told me, oh, we have a copy of the entire evening. And I would have been worried, oh, they're going to hear this. They're going to hear me bitching out these cops. And the judge is just going to hate me for it. And so I'll never win. Or they can show this to a jury and the jury will be unsympathetic. No, I found out the recording was crap. Wouldn't have known if I hadn't gotten a copy, though. So I filed those two and got I filed the pretrial discovery motion, got their material evidence, at least what they were willing to admit to, because you have to play this cat and mouse game of you have to ask the right questions and you have to ask for things specifically. If you don't know that it's there, you can't ask for it. But then before before a criminal trial occurs, there is the pretrial conference where certain motions are allowed to be made, and there's a discussion, an informal discussion between you and the DA in front of a judge over, you know, trying to negotiate a settlement so they don't have to spend lots of time and money trying to actually convict you, because, well, that cuts into their profits, and they can't have that. So the pretrial conference comes around, and right away, you know, I go walk in there with my big stack of notes, my no-low defense book, you know, all torn up and melted apart and everything, because I've been going to
recommend that people buy.
I so recommend that book.
And again, the book is
No Low Press. Everyone knows No Low Press. Criminal defense or criminal self-defense. A pretty obvious title like that. It's the only one that they seem to have. But it's as good as all the usual No Low Press books are. It's very good. So I showed up with all my notes, and you know they already had seen the evidence I was asking for. They'd already seen. I now am learning their process, and they'd already seen that I hadn't been willing to spend $3,000 on a non-refundable retainer for one of their buddies in the local bar association in San Mateo County. So at this point, they're not going to make any money off of me. They won't make any money there at the courthouse. They're going to spend money trying to convict me. Their buddies aren't going to make any money. They decided, I was hoping for this, and they decided at that point to drop resisting arrest charge. It's early. They decided to drop the resisting arrest charge in exchange for just the parking ticket. And at that point, I was so stressed out over this entire process and worn out from it, because I was risking a year in county jail and a $3,000 fine. That's what the threat is. When they say resisting arrest, they're saying, we're going to try to put you in jail for a year and steal lots of money from you. And, I mean, a year in jail will cost anyone their home, their job. They're trying to ruin your life. The only people who have nothing to fear here are people who have nothing to lose anyway.
Well, I know that, I guess I know more than I knew before. It's good to hear of a successful resisting arrest defense.
Ouch.
Something I can post that out and get this together here. We're talking amateur recordings, but hopefully the audience is still with us. I know that others have suggested you can also attempt to interview witnesses pre-trials, even the police. You can attempt to go and interview them about what, and then you can, and if they refuse to be interviewed, you can indicate that at the trial. Hey, look, they didn't want to be interviewed. Why was that?
As far as witnesses go, you can compel the testimony of witnesses. I forget the term for this, but for cops specifically, though, in my reading of case law, which, by the way, internet case law, anytime you're charged with anything, go look up existing records for previous charges. Other times people have fought this and either won or lost in other courts, in other states even, and see what the existing case law is on the subject. I found so much established case law on PC 148 in Texas, specifically in Texas, in California, that established that you have the right to verbally challenge cops and they cannot arrest you for resisting arrest. They do this all the time. People have fought it. People have won. It is case law now, and they still try to press these charges against people because they assume most of us don't actually know. Because who's going to spend as many hours as it actually takes to research this stuff basically doing the job of a lawyer. Most of us are not going to do it, and they count on that. But this matter, you know, whether or not if you've been just bitching out a cop and they don't like it, and so they resist, they arrest you for resisting arrest, even if you just hesitate, if your compliance is not immediate, it turns out that that's already been used as an excuse for PC 148 and shot down by the courts. There's so much good stuff in case law that only lawyers know about because only lawyers spend the time to learn about this stuff. You can use this to actually defend yourself too. And I had several printouts, pages and pages of case law printouts. I was ready. I had big guns loaded for that trial. I was going to make them really fight to convict me. I think they got that sense, and that's why they just let it go. I wasn't worth it.
How many hours did you spend preparing before the case was dropped?
Oh, total, probably about 40 or 50 solid hours of reading and discussions with people, because I didn't know much about criminal law, so I now I'm borderline, you know, amateur criminal defense attorney.
You feel it was time well spent, or do you feel that because you didn't do a civil lawsuit to recover any of the money, right?
No, at that point I was just so glad to not be under the threat of a year in jail. You know, this is what everyone goes through. It's so tiring, it's so draining, that if you manage to even get that far, you're just happy to be let go. And that's what they're counting on too. And in hindsight, once I realized that they were backing down, I should have gone for their throats. I should have been suing them left and right. I should have been filing false arrest charges. But I was just so tired of it that I let it go that time. But next time that they pull that shit on me, now I've already been through that process up to the pretrial conference point. I'm used to that. So I will get it to that. I'll take it all the way to the pretrial conference. And then when I win there, I'll still have energy left. And I'll still have endurance left for fighting them even further. Because now I know what else I could have done. Next time I will do it.
Did you get any help from attorneys?
I called several and got a quick, like, half an hour, 15-minute, whatever, you know, phone consultation for them for free. I pretty much called six or seven of them that way. I didn't use any local ones because this was up in San Mateo County. And since laws change from county to county and court procedures change and judges' attitudes change.
Law changes. It's statewide law, but I guess court procedures may differ from county to county.
Not only do court procedures change, but even on matters of state law, the different judges have different standards. The attorneys know that there are certain trends, there are certain things that are more likely to get through or to not get through based on the local judge's attitude. And only the local lawyers know that. So I asked all the local lawyers up there that I could find what their opinion was. And they were all telling me that I was crazy to defend myself. But they were also telling me that, yes, this charge is complete nonsense. It's bullshit. One even called up the DA's office and talked to his friends there and got the scoop, the inside scoop for me. And he came back and said, this is chicken shit. This is a complete joke.
But they still thought you shouldn't defend yourself because they needed your money?
Well, they don't need my money, but they certainly wanted my money. Yeah, they want my money, and they want our submission. Every time that we give in, we teach ourselves and we teach everyone else to just give in. And we set a bad precedent for one another and for ourselves every time we submit like this.
What about the attorneys, though? The attorneys you talked to who helped you, did they, the same attorneys who gave you the inside information and told you the charge was bullshit, did they suggest that you could still defend yourself effectively?
No, they were very much against me defending myself. Of course, they wanted me to hire them. That's what it really came down to. And I was managing to get all the information I could from them without actually paying them anything. And, you know, after about half an hour, they all figured that out and then said, okay, they've got to go now. And I thanked them for their time, and I'm grateful for their time. And actually, I now have a small list of lawyers up in San Mateo County that I respect their opinion. And if I really needed to hire a lawyer, I'd go back to some of those, the ones that gave me really good advice.
San Mateo County. We were talking with Van here. Van is also a man who began, although there's some controversy about this, Santa Cruz Indie Media before...
Resurrected. Some people had put together a first version of San Mateo. Santa Cruz Indie Media. It looked like they abandoned it before it really got off the ground. They hacked it up, they trashed it, and they left it abandoned. And then I resurrected that. So it was Indie Media version 1.5.
This is about 2001?
Yeah, around then.
And at that time, Indie Media, which is a local news service, for those who don't know, where you can actually read a lot of local stories, Donna Dice's story, I guess, you read about that on Indie Media, you heard about it on the radio, which is why you came to court today, right?
Yep, I read about that just passing by Indie Media last night and saw that a fellow sister was out there fighting another PC 148, and I've developed a real sympathy for people fighting PC 148, so I thought I'd come down and join the crowd, and then, gee, the crowd is all of me and you and Donna and lawyer, and where are you people? You talk about solidarity, you talk about fighting the man, and you talk about an injustice against one is an injustice against all. It's 8 a.m., and I don't get up before even 10 a.m. to go to my job, but I'm down here. Where the hell are you people?
So there. Well, let me see if... the remaining 2 minutes, summarize the problems that what you found when you started Indie Media or resurrected it, and what's happened since that concerns you.
The problems I found were just technical. It was just an abandoned project that people hadn't finished, and the guys who had hacked on it didn't do a very good job. So I just pulled it, drug it back out of the mud and got it going again.
And then what's happened to it since?
Oh, I don't know what's happened to it since. I got it going again. A crowd showed up and started using it, and then the editorial collective started. And just all these people that didn't help to actually bring the site back up or didn't actually feed it content wanted to jump on the bandwagon and wanted to be a part of the decision-making process without putting any real effort in. There were a few of that crowd that did put in real effort, and you guys know who you are. But mostly people just wanted to participate without contributing, and next thing you know, there's all sorts of nonsense and bullshit and just bureaucracy dragging it down. One of the features I set up originally was that there was no memory hole. If an article got pulled from the newswire, it was put off to the side where it could be second-guessed, it could be analyzed, people could point to it, people would say, hey, there's my article, why did it get pulled? It was going to be transparency. Nothing actually got deleted. After I quit because I couldn't stand all the hippie politics and bullshit, then that was one of the first features that got pulled. The memory hole was reestablished, true censorship was reestablished, and articles that someone didn't approve of would quietly disappear. And that's one of the reasons why I quit to begin with, was that kind of attitude.
I know also that there was, LA Indie Media still uses an approach where they not only don't delete articles, they hide them, and they also let you know. There's a series of categories that explains at least why they moved them. They thought it was spam, they thought it was a personal attack, white supremacist, and they don't believe in that.
That was actually part of when I reset up Indie Media. That was one of the things I established, which was every time we pull an article in the subject, we will indicate with one of these short little text codes what is the reason for this article being pulled. I was just insisting on that as the new sysadmin. And then once I left, no one wanted to do that.
Did you have any indication through your discussions before you left why this tendency of essentially, I call it a Stalinist tendency, where a small group of people makes decisions that impact everybody else without any accountability? That's not just Stalinism, it's Bushism, it's Obamaism, it's Clintonism, it's your usualism. But why do you think that happened here? Any analysis?
It's just human nature. Everybody's just fighting for control and power, and they're all afraid of the other side. I mean, obviously, I don't think liberals are any different from conservatives these days. Everybody's afraid of each other, and everybody just thinks that might makes right, and if they just get control and get power, they can make things their way, and everything will be okay as long as everything is done their way.
And you're hoping someday to start up a new indie media that is censorship-free, or at least censorship... isn't really censorship is you hide but you don't delete.
Well, that's my idea between my next job, so I'll have time to do that. I've been telling myself I'd do that for the last 5 years. I haven't gotten around to it yet. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of effort, more effort than people realize, which is why there isn't one yet.
And indeed, if you want to see a discussion of this on Indie Media, it was put in the doghouse section of the Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is it was removed at the bottom of the screen. But there is I propose that Indie Media indeed resume what it was doing when you left Indie Media, which is to assert why particular stories are censored and put them in a place where people can still read them if they want to. Thus far, I've gotten no substantive responses from Indie Media for some strange reason, but hey, the struggle continues.
Yeah, it will, as long as someone's willing to show up at 8 a.m.
Well, it's 15 to 10 now. Thank you very much. We've been talking with
Van Dempsey, infamous Santa Cruz troublemaker.
Thank you, Van.
And all that happened at the county courthouse on the day of the Huff meeting a week ago, same day that Donna Dice got Ben Rice to show up in court for her and hopefully to beat back this charge and maybe to, frankly, kick the ass of the abusive police officers and their superiors in the SCPD who feel that they can break the arm of an elderly woman in their private little drug war, or I'm the authority, recognize me or pay the penalty procedures. Maybe we can have that whole thing brought to light, exposed, and hopefully if there's a cost, maybe there'll be some changes. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm hoping to hear from Julia Vinograd. Not sure why I haven't heard from her, but maybe I will. Hopefully that'll be coming up soon. Let's see here. Looking online to see what's happening here. What have we got? Wow, there's a Donna Dice thread seems to have grown. Donna, I've talked about this case a lot, perhaps too much. There's actually a lot of updates. For those of you who are interested, you can go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz and get an update on what's happening here. And also, more important, though, is an update on what's going on out there. If anybody has reports on how police have been behaving, we want to hear them here on the radio. The community needs to know what's been cooking. Perhaps good stuff has been happening. Maybe police have been acting particularly respectfully, returning lost dogs and cats, helping poor people find shelter, all the wonderful things that we know our police department perhaps could do, but often seems to be not doing, or at least not that I've heard about, and perhaps I've not been listening in the right way. Fresno has a particularly active homeless advocate group, people who are concerned with restoring rights to homeless people. We know that people like Mike Rhodes, journalist I've had in the studio, who's written extensively, and you can read his stuff and see his pictures on indiebay.org/Central Valley, in Central Valley Indie Media, if you want to go check it out. He and others were able to bring to attorneys documentation of homeless property being destroyed, bulldozed, crushed, compacted, tossed away in dumpsters. And as a consequence, the city of Fresno is now kicking down $2.3 million, along with Caltrans, to both the attorneys and homeless people. And that's covered in the current issue of Street Spirit, which is now available from Huff. If you want to come to a Huff meeting or give a call to 423-HUFF or check the main library, you can check the July issue of Street Spirit. Or you can just go online and read about it. There's also another interesting debate happening online in the Fresno Homeless Advocate group. And I kind of wanted to read a bit since I haven't heard from Julia. Maybe she's having some problems calling in. Maybe I've got some problem here, and we're not getting a proper phone call happening, so I'm having a little difficulty with the phone. Let's see if we actually are. Got both lines plugged in. Let's see what happens. I do hope I can hear from her. She's a great poet, and I don't hear from her. I'll read a few of her poems from the latest issue of Street Spirit, but she does it. Obviously, you want to hear the poet rather than the radio broadcaster guy. At least I do. But while we're waiting, as I said, there's an interesting discussion of kind of the Fresno homeless bureaucracy. But we may not need to wait any longer. Let's see if we actually have the person we're looking for. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, it's Julie Vinograd calling in, like you told me to.
Oh, good, good. I was afraid maybe we missed you, it being 7 minutes after seven.
Oh, good. The phone rang at 2 minutes. There was a...
I know, the dog ate the phone line, yes.
You got it.
Well, look, it's good to hear from you, Juliana, and I haven't yet read your poems in the current issue of Street Spirit, but I know you've got a bunch of new ones. Your most recent book is called...
When God Gets Drunk.
When God Gets Drunk.
Certainly I think that would explain so much, don't you?
Maybe High on Meth?
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Perhaps, but you've written some poems that no one has heard yet, or at least very few. And
oh, yes, quite a lot.
Well, perhaps you can start divulging some of these treasures for us so we can warm up to the radio and cozy up and,
I've got a 4th of July poem.
Okay.
There was a knock on my door. I answered. It was America, looking scared with its flags unrolling and blood clotting in its hair. Can I crash with you? Do you have a spare bed I can hide under? They're after me. Could you fit in my room? I asked. Aren't you the biggest, strongest country I heard about in high school, and who's after you? America was gasping, hands shaking too much to light a cigarette. It kept trying and grinding the dead matches under its heel like heads. Everybody. They used to want me so much. I bathed in their eyes each morning, but now they're coming with pitchforks and torches and the things they say. America tried to set its face into a quarter's firmness and fails. Well, have I been very bad? Well, yes, I told America, but I put up a junkie friend who just robbed a liquor store once, and I suppose you're the same thing on a larger scale. Some rules. Only one night. If you steal anything, you can't come back, and you can't scream in the night when you get the shakes or the cops will come. America staggered into my room and collapsed in a second-hand leather armchair, which creaked but held. In 2 seconds, America was asleep, breathing through its half-open mouth, its throat thrown back, hopefully not dreaming. The terror of the world, I shook my head, looking down at America for a moment, and then I went to put some coffee up to boil.
The 4th of July, did they wall off the beaches in Berkeley like they did in Santa Cruz?
No.
Oh, well, you should come down to Santa Cruz and watch some real police action here.
I'll bet.
Run some more of them. Bias. I know you've got some poems lined up.
Okay, yeah. Let's see. On the street. I'm not here. Don't look at me. Don't scream when your children look at me. Do you think bad dreams are contagious? Do you think I'll breathe bad luck on your children? Suppose you'd spent the afternoon shining in your lover's bed and then brought him home to meet your parents and they screamed, "Don't touch that. You don't know where it's been." You can't see me. I'm just a crack in your contact lens. I'm just a crack in your mirror. My hands are dirty. I've got your shadow under my fingernails. I can't wash it out. I've got the shakes. My own skin isn't speaking to me, and I'm not speaking to you. I'm not here. I have no past, no memories, no name. Not allowed. So I eat your memories like garbage. All your buried, broken promises and the bad dreams you forget till you see me. So you don't see me, I'm not here.
On, more.
Okay, instructions for soldiers back from war. Do not kill the waiter who shoves a hot plate of soup too close to your face. There are no grenades in the clam chowder. Do not kill the waiter. Do not kill the fat man who pushes his belly and cart ahead of you in the grocery checkout line. His friends are not about to fire on you from the trees. There are no trees in the grocery, and the fat man has no friends. Do not kill the fat man. Do not kill the smiling secretary who won't let you in to talk to your doctor. The doctor is a very busy man. She wants to be a tape recording when she grows up. She's a large boulder blocking a narrow trail in the jungle. You always smell the jungle. Do not kill the smiling secretary. Do not kill the nervous people at work who talk about the war around the water cooler as if war were a football game. They expect you to kill them if a ghost can kill and their laughter is all wrong. You spent years doing what was expected, but do not kill the nervous people. Do not kill your family who are not your family anymore. Somebody loved them and you're living in his house. You know your gun better than your 3-year-old son. You always will. Close your eyes in bed with your wife. Remember the teenage whore who tried to stab you. Your hands were always your deadliest weapon. Be polite. Sit on your hands. Do not kill your family. Do not kill yourself. It is a soldier's duty to stay alive, even in the land of the dead, which seems to be all around you. There's no taste at home-cooked food, but do not eat your gun. The enemy could appear at any moment. Wait for the enemy.
I like it.
Okay.
Keep it up. What else we got?
All right. I wrote one for Tim Russert.
Okay.
We've lost one of our best babysitters. He changed the newspapers like diapers and didn't let anyone get away with anything. General, you can't hide the war under your plate with your peas. Eat your dinner or I'll tell your mother. She doesn't care what I do. Look at all these shiny medals she gave me. But I'm looking after you now, and I do care. If you make war, you eat war, and don't slip it to the dog under the table. Don't you want to grow up to be big and strong someday? Tim Russert was one of the few people left who believed we'd grow up someday. Sunday mornings, people stayed in bed, read the Sunday funnies, and watched Tim's plump smile rise like the sun. He told world leaders about our worries like we help with our kids' homework, so they grow up big and strong, so we grow up someday. Just looking at that smile, you could tell he knew where all the lost socks were and what to say to the monsters in the closet. I only wish his show came on when the world woke up wailing in the middle of the night. Maybe now it will.
Well, you thought more of him than I did.
I kind of liked him, and I liked him not letting anybody get away with anything.
I don't know about that either, but...
Well, whatever.
Uh-huh. What else you got?
Weird poem about the fires. Are they close to you guys?
I think it's somewhere between 25% and 50% contained now at Big Sur.
Good.
But yeah, we had some fires here, but they've been all been put out.
Well,
but hey, make it hot for us.
I guess it's just to be contrary. Called fire, forest fire all over the state. Red, yellow, orange, white, crimson, bursting out, flickering, flexing its long rippling muscles, more alive than us. Fire close enough we could swallow a loose spark at any moment and leap out of our flesh and bones to fiercely clutch the sky like lovers after a long separation, tearing off clothes and leaping into bed. We are dry trees about to be raped by lightning, brighter and wilder than spring blossoms. We are tangled undergrowth waiting for sleek, shiny flames to ride us roaring the way we ride the BART, but there's no safe other side to that hungry ride, shooting up like hell's Disneyland. We are fire hydrants, half in love with fire. Our shadows burn behind us and come back reluctantly when we call, like school children sitting at endless desks, watching the clock, all waiting to go out and play with fire. We do what we're told, mostly, while the fire mocks us. More briefly splendid than all the ancient forests it destroys, like a drag-racing bully telling us to eat its smoke. We can't catch up. We feel the small, cold chains we've locked our lives into while fire burns free, out of control, so big, so terrible, so bright, and so goddamn beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That it was weird.
It calls my pyromaniac days. Huh. Well, what else you got?
Okay. Overheard at a bus stop, and I really did hear this. I waited for a bus while two young girls talked about TV characters, maybe from an unreality show, and their hands and bodies explained the plot. When a couple made love, one girl linked both her little fingers and shook them between her breasts, and the other girl whispered, "Aww," her voice descending a naked staircase. And she found out she had cancer on her wedding day, and it was so sad, and the music was so sad, and she had the cutest town. And all his life he wanted to kiss her, and last night he found out she wanted him too, and so they kissed, wink and hip shrug. But then, of course, he had to go back to his wife. Characters they didn't like, they waved away with a small dismissing gesture of little pink hands. I've seen it before when couples in restaurants get rid of old women selling roses. By now I was interested, but not in the show. One of their mothers worked, leaving the house free for random parties, and I think they also partied on the unreality show. A few guests, more or less. Who cared? It was all so cute, so sweet, so sad.
Okay.
Yeah, kids.
We got more time if you got more poetry.
Okay, see what I've got.
How many poems actually don't make it into your books? Do you kind of put a bunch aside that never get published?
Some aren't good enough, or some I'll have too many on the same subject or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And you have these piled up, because I know you have, 45 or 50 books now, right?
I think over 50 or whatever. But if they're not in any particular organization, sometimes they'll make it into the next book. Sometimes they'll need to be reworked.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
But in the Julia Vinograd files, there are hundreds of unpublished poems.
Oh, there's plenty.
Huh.
Okay. A bag of cherries. black cherries pouring through my fingers, cooler than gold coins, sweeter, soft as leftover nipples after God created Eve. The skin's moist as if the whole bag had just been making love. Sometimes two cherries couple on a stem still stuck together. I bite without pulling them apart. It would be rude to interrupt. They're too full of each other to moan with pleasure. I also fill my mouth. Purple juice stains my tongue, teeth, fingers. Could I give wounded soldiers cherries, transfusions? Not for lost blood, but for lost memories when they were boys and stole from the neighbor's cherry tree and, unlike George Washington, lied about it. Transfusions of sweet time while soldiers' wounds ride them like wild horses in hospital beds. If I didn't eat these cherries, they'd all get pregnant. I spit out the pits and feel cherry blossoms opening in my throat as I swallow. Cherry blossoms pink over soldiers' graves.
Nice.
I got time for one more?
More than one, if you want.
In that case, maybe I'll do one from Street Spirit and one new one.
Okay.
Wasn't planning on doing the Street Spirit ones. Mad Bag Lady. Fat, crazy bag lady dressed like a heavenly dump spotted with little yellow smiley faces, and she spreads over her corner like toxic waste with button-bright eyes. Bag lady still talking to her bitch of a sister who stole her husband and moved to jury 10 years ago. Of course he was a weak fool not to see through you. You'd even lie to the undertaker, and I hope you get the chance real soon. Bag lady gasps for breath like a train hooting through her mottled throat. So I don't know why I was surprised. You always stole my stockings, tossing your yellow hair like hair was your invention and you'd had it patented. Most men aren't worth a good pair of stockings. Mine sure wasn't. You sat outside in the swing wearing my new stockings and waved your legs at the sky, signaling the saucers in. It's all your fault. You sent men with polite clipboards and they turned everything off. You poisoned my mirror and my poodle. We used to wear matching pink ribbons. I remember it all. He said he liked the way your pieces fit together. I'll cut you in pieces if you open your mouth. I'll pull your tongue out. The sister who isn't there says nothing. Bag lady's puffed up like a toad and soaking in madness like a fashionable mud bath at an expensive spa. That's in Street Spirit.
Uh-huh.
And this is one of the new ones. Called We Need More Words. We need more words, words like hairballs, cap cough up, living words, ugly and close to the skin as sweat. TV ads promise to get rid of sweat while lovers slick it off each other. The dictionary is not enough. The dictionary is like those boxes from supermarkets with expiration dates on the label in small print. The dictionary is no longer good to eat, and it's a hungry world. The dictionary is the verbal equivalent of the army's meals ready to eat, but we need angry soldiers, dirty jokes, curses hot as the desert sun, and words rising from spit like Venus rose from a wave. We need so much, we need more words to wrap our wanting in because it's cold. Dictionary words wrote homework books on historical wars with footnotes, but we need living licorice words to sell peace like a bright, shiny new car and bring all our soldiers home to drive it. Nowhere wild words clog a muddy, vacant lot among blackberry vines and dead tires. Your children come home, their mouths full of purple stains and words you never heard before. There's a flock of seagulls on a cliff teaching a sentence to fly into the storm. Talk back to thunder, strike back at lightning, let words pour down like rain. There are building inspectors in every amusement park to ensure the rides. Don't ride the dictionary, it's built above a fault line, your fault. A grain of sand can grow a pearl, a word can grow a tank, crushing everything before it. We need words that hunt with tigers and go down under cities. with men to fight sewage pipes? Where's the word to put on a crying child's scraped knee? How have we fed the word love lately? The dictionary is an elegant cemetery for crossword puzzles, but we need living words, brave and bright and foolish, words we can light like farts because it's dark outside.
Nice.
Okay.
So we've been listening to Julia Vinograd, who lives up in Berkeley, where you've been for, what, 40, 45 years now?
40, I think.
And before that, where did you live?
Let's see. I was actually born in Berkeley, but I grew up in Southern California. Came to college here in 61.
Uh-huh. Your college has, of course, given you an honorary Ph.D., right?
No, I got a regular B.A. At Cal. Then I got a Master of Fine Arts from the University of Iowa. And then I came back to Berkeley in 67, and I've been here ever since. The city of Berkeley gave me some kind of weird unofficial, poet thingamabobble.
They named a street after you, right?
No, they didn't. No, but I've got one of my poems on that big anthology of the street thing, so people can read it with their feet if they won't read it with their heads.
A Braille poem?
No, it's not Braille. It's in the cement.
Huh.
I forget what it's called.
So you're discriminating against the site challenge, Dame.
No, this is a whole anthology of poems chosen to represent, the city or the country or something, and they're on like two blocks of some street.
Huh. And you find this by going to the Chamber of Commerce and sniffing around? Or
no,
something?
There's a lot of fuss about it.
Huh. I don't think I've ever been to that part of the town, or at least not after they wrote the poetry in the sidewalks, whatever. Go ahead.
It's okay. They used a short poem of mine, and I think all of them are short poems, so they'll fit the sidewalk.
Hmm. Well, I know that your picture can be found still on the side of the...
Oh, the mural, yes.
The building up on Telegraph.
I quite like that.
You do or you don't?
I do.
Uh-huh.
I posed for it.
Yeah.
Osher Newman and his commune did it. It's all very nice.
So are you and OSHA still a number? What's happening with the two of you?
We were never a number, but I did pose for that thing. He's a good guy.
Yeah, OSHA's actually been on my show, and he was helping us for a while with the sleeping band lawsuit when we were trying to do it.
He helps everybody with everything.
Yeah, he has the suitcase legal clinic up in Berkeley. Do you have any... ever do a poetry class for young poets? Ever attempted to teach people how to write poems?
I like getting together with one, sometimes two people, and and we all sort of, it's the poetry equivalent of a jam, but I don't think I could teach.
Huh.
If you
can't do, you teach. So.
Yeah, well, with one or two people sometimes. There's some people that I will hang out and we'll all write together and read each other our stuff. But that's not a lot of people, and it doesn't work with everybody.
So you have some poetry readings coming up for those who want to hustle up to Alameda County, right?
Yeah, there's a big one in Oakland. It's two features and an open. Here, I'll read you the flyer.
Okay.
It's me and Jan Steckel, and it's July 19th. 2 to 4 in the afternoon, and an open mic at the Lakeview Library, which is at 550 El Embarcadero in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can. I'll give you a phone number for more information.
Okay.
510-834-7446. And they want you to phone at least 5 working days prior to the event. Or you can also email a little brown sparrow a in a circle yahoo.com.
Now, you sell your own books. Used to be sold them for a dollar way back when. Now they're for $5.
They're for $5. They're thicker and they're classier looking, and they've got illustrations and stuff.
And the price of bread has gone up.
And the price of bread has gone up.
What?
I do trade sometimes, and I negotiate.
And you can be found in the Cafe Mediterranean occasionally during the day on Telegraph Avenue, about 3 or 4 blocks from the campus?
Yeah.
And you sell your own book there?
Yeah, I can sell my own books there.
Now, with the death of Cody's, how many retail outlets do you still have? I know we tried to set you up at City Lights, and they're difficult to manage. They didn't really do too well with your consignment.
They're difficult. I'm at Moe's. I'm at Shakespeare's. Not very many at Shakespeare's, but the guy who does the poetry readings at Moe's likes me. He's nice. Owen. Not very many places.
What about the Berkeley Public Library? Do they have your work?
They have some of it.
Hmm. Well, and when will your gold-crusted edition of the complete works of Julia Vinograd be coming out?
Probably after my death. I think there's a law.
I see. Okay, you got to die first. Then we make money off of you. You're also, how's your health? You seem like you're getting frailer as the years go on.
Well, yeah, I'm not young.
And are you still bubbling around? I know you had
I have the bubbles.
The mural shows you, you know, in a kind of a black...
I always carry the bubbles with me in case I meet somebody who remembers them and wants them. I don't stand on the corner and blow them for hours at a time as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I do get older, but I do have them.
Now, have you run afoul of the police in your recently in any way?
Well, not for bubbles. No, the stuff the police are getting, giving everybody hassle about, I'm not quite strong. I'm not going to go and sit on an oak tree. This is just not physically possible.
Ah, the tree sitters up
there. Yeah, I'm very in favor of them.
Mm-hmm. What's happening in People's Park? You ever spend time there?
Not as much as I used to. I went for the anniversary, big party, because it was a boiling day. I didn't stay too much.
Uh-huh. And as for the political complexion of the town, we've interviewed Chris Worthington, one of your Berkeley council members on the
I like him. It was horrible that he didn't get that thing he was running for. He's a totally good guy.
He was running for assembly or something, I think?
They railroaded him. He wasn't living out of Berkeley. He was just spending a lot of time with his girlfriend who was living in Oakland.
I think you're thinking of the rent control board.
Yes, I am.
That wasn't Chris, but that was somebody else who actually...
No, that was Chris.
Really?
Really.
Well, I know there was another... Because Chris isn't on the rent control board, you know. He's...
Not anymore.
He's a... he wasn't on it for the last 5 or 6 years, or if he was on it at all. He's been on the board of the city council.
Yeah, well, he's anyway a good guy, and I wanted him to win whatever he was running for.
Uh-huh.
And I know he didn't.
Well, you got a last poem for us before we leave you up there?
Oh, Lord, I don't know. Let's see. Well, this one's kind of silly. It's called So Hot.
Okay.
So hot the museum statues dropped their marble drapery with a classical thud. The Mona Lisa shrugged off her dark shirt. 2 baby mice nursed at her full breast, sometimes biting. St. George piled his heavy armor on the dead dragon as a garbage heap. Even his halo sweated. Jesus and his disciples stripped and went skinny dipping in a sea of blood done by some modern protest painter. And when Jesus tried to walk on blood, they pushed him flat on his ass, frightening the sharks. Napoleon took off that military jacket, not just one arm hid there, but a whole octopus. No wonder he got so much done. So hot. King Henry VIII tore off royal robes and set his hairy bellies and balls free to the wind, but still clutched that chicken leg in case there's any doubt who's in charge. And all this with museum air conditioning, where heat and light get as filtered as time. Outside flies die in the air. So hot. Little old ladies clutch their purses and gasp, being mugged for breath. Red welts of sunburn teenage packs of grunge skateboard riders, sand dunes blow between parking meters, light grinds out of shop windows like pointed spears bright for pretty girls to check their reflections. Clammy sweat makes everyone's skin need changing like a baby's diaper, so hot. The Holy Grail is full of bitter strawberries. Cold beers work briefly like stepping stones in a boiling river. There's an air-conditioned horror movie where cold-blooded lizard monsters lick us clean, then eat us with Diet Coke and buttered popcorn. I gotta go. I'm being beeped.
All right. I'll let you go, Julia. And, hey,
okay,
thank you for calling. And Julia actually can be reached if you want to pick up her poetry. Give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can also probably get her by Googling on the Internet. I'm going to see if actually we can reach her that way. Usually she gives her phone number and her address for those who want to pick up her poetry. Tried to get the Santa Cruz Library interested, but they weren't. Let's see here. Apparently that, having a little trouble finding it. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, if you're interested. And the phone number here is 427-3772, if you'd like to call in. She actually does have a website, juliavinograd.com. You can see her picture on the website, one of her poems, Beside Myself, How I Became the Bubble Lady. But there isn't an address for her to get poetry. Get back in touch with me. I think it's Zeitgeist Press, actually, that you can pick up her stuff from. Her latest book, When God Gets Drunk, they're charging $9. You can get it for her for $5. And lots of titles, When God Gets Drunk, Berkeley Street Cannibals, Skull and Crosswords, Step Into My Parlor, Ask a Mask, Beside Myself, Blues for All of Us, Blues for the Berkeley Inn, Cannibal Carnival, Dead People Laughing, Graffiti, Horn of Empty, Street Samurai, Suspicious Characters. Wow, the list goes on and on. That's only the last 15 or the last 20 years or so. She's been writing for 40 years. So anyway, that's Julia Vinograd, Berkeley poet. Let's get a little more pedestrian. Here's some more Capital Steps.
Flight 127 from Minneapolis to Boise will be leaving shortly. Paging Boise passenger Larry Craig. Boise passenger Larry Craig.
Hey guys, what you doing out there? Here in this men's room, these stalls could be 10 rooms for romance. I can hear a dryer blowing. I can hear somebody going. You've got a flight soon, but I think I might soon have no pants. Oh, my darling, tap 3 times. I'll be kneeling if you want me. Twice on the pipe. If you brought me a leash, oh my darling, means you'll meet me on the jetway. Just knock on the door if you're not the police. Now this, of course, does not mean I'm gay. Sex isn't gay when it's done by 2 straight men together. If you'd like an Idaho man, maybe I could play the woman. Now I've got cowhide pants, so let's take a wide stance in leather. Oh, my darling, tap 3 times if you want some Senate polling. Put your hand down below if you might like to meet. Oh, my sweet thing, I'm your stud from the state that's famous for its spuds. And spuds go with meat, so grab this Senate seat. I'm not gay.
And that was another one from Campaign and Suffering, Tap Three Times. So there. A few more street interviews, and then we'll get back to, well, something about Fresno. Stay tuned. If you'd like to call in, you can. 427-3772 is the phone number here. I'm available if you want to talk, and the radio waves are available if you want people to hear you.
A woman who prefers to remain anonymous, that she got a citation yesterday for panhandling out of the boardwalk, wharf thereabouts.
Yep.
And this was, what were you doing at the time? You were just sitting on a bench?
I was just sitting on the bench with a sign.
And what did the sign say?
Diabetic, anything helps.
Are you diabetic?
Yes.
Does anything help?
Yes.
But not a ticket, that didn't help.
No.
And this is a lone cop or a cop with a companion?
Two bicycle cops.
And what did the officer say to you?
He told me that he was going to give me a ticket, and I asked him what for. He said panhandling on a bench. I was like, okay, I didn't know I couldn't do this. And he's like, well, it's apparently your job. You guys consider this your job, so you should know the status of your job and what you can and cannot do. So here's your ticket.
What did his companion say? Anything?
Nothing.
And what did you say back?
Nothing. I just signed the ticket and was like, whatever.
And is there a court date on the ticket, or say within 30 days you got to go?
It says that within 30 days I have to go pay it.
If you want, you should contact Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom and talk to us.
I'm kind of with them.
We'll try to help you.
I'm kind of with them. They can both say.
Give us a street name you want to be called.
I don't have.
We'll call you NASA.
What?
NASA.
Okay.
All right, thanks, NASA. Talking with Free. How many tickets you got, Zay?
I have five.
And they are for?
Various infractions and I think it's maybe one minor misdemeanor or something. Small stuff. About four of them were just unjust stuff.
Sleeping? Or?
A couple of them were sleeping, and then the others just like basic junk, you know. I mean, yeah, where they could have just gave me a warning.
But none of your property has been destroyed recently?
No.
Good. No. Have you heard of anybody's property being destroyed?
No, I haven't.
Excellent. Thank you, Free.
You're welcome, sir. Always.
All right.
Bar.
Sorry.
To the bar.
Sorry, Bar.
It's all right.
All right, Bar. Positive report on a police officer. Your name?
Wait. We went over this already.
Like,
I gotta say, I'm not okay with all this.
Okay, but we had some positive things.
The officer's name is Peabody.
Oh yes.
He just asked us to leave a spot in the middle of the night.
I think I remember we talked about it at some point.
No, this was not the other night.
Okay, well, so no ticket though. You just were asked to leave.
Yeah, he was totally polite.
Thank you. Any hassles? Police tickets?
Every
recently?
I got arrested.
Wow. What for?
Being stupid in public.
You don't look stupid. Talking with a guy who has a positive report on the police. What?
I actually encountered Sergeant Bush recently, and he was very considerate and dignified and respectful. And see, Officer Eric Peabody is a tremendous person, and it's good to see someone like that in the force. They could certainly use it, so it's good to see someone who's a commendable person.
Have you seen bad police as well?
In my experience, yeah. This is a while back, so I don't know their names.
Good. But, I'm glad you got some positive stuff.
Yes, yeah, nice to have that.
Do you want to say who you are, or keep it anonymous?
Keep it anonymous, thank you.
Thank you. We're talking with?
Jay.
And Jay, so you got some tickets?
Yeah.
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yep.
And what were they about?
Camping, couple camping, panhandling, and open container.
And all in the same day? Or?
No.
And what were the camping tickets about?
I was sleeping.
Where were you sleeping?
One of them I was in a park, and the other just on the outskirts in the woods.
And was it the same officer or a bunch of officers?
First one was two officers, second one was one officer.
Did they give you a legal place to go?
No.
What did they say to you?
That I had to move.
Were you in the Poconip area? Or?
No.
And how many nights have you slept out?
Almost every night. Almost every night since I've been here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry. All right. And any other comments?
No, I just think it's a very large violation of human rights that I can't sleep. I don't want to.
Here. We've been talking with?
Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
talking with.
Ryan.
And you say, and you just finished a good pee.
Yeah, right, after a couple of beers.
Take it in Jesus.
And, this officer just kind of put his spotlight on me and told me, what are you doing here? And actually didn't even request to search my vehicle at all. He just asked me if there's something I have to know about in there while I was in cuffs, you know, and not being read my rights at all during this whole process. So I was like,
now, how many police were involved?
Actually, two.
And you ended up with a ticket?
Yeah, and they actually took me to jail.
And how long were you held?
10 days.
Wow. What was the charge?
Possession of a controlled substance and transporting controlled substance.
The substance was?
I wasn't transporting it. I was actually stationary.
Were you convicted, or are you still facing court on that?
Actually, that's still in the courts.
And you're charged. What's the controlled substance you're charged with?
Cocaine.
On a muffin?
Any problems with camping or sleeping?
No, just parking on Highway 9 past sunset. No, give me a ticket.
You're talking about a large quantity of cocaine or a small quantity?
Not even, like $5 worth. Rock.
And you were all right. Anything else you want to add to this?
No. That's about it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. So I just got a ticket here handed to me by Chemo, who previously got a scavenging ticket, but this is another one. He's showing me, and he's showing
100%
our
outlaw.
A 100% outlaw tattoo on his left bicep by Cricky.
He's taking a picture.
He's taking a picture. But yeah, when did you get this ticket? I can't really read the date. It's like June 26th, a couple weeks ago.
And don't comment. I'm in too much trouble.
You're in too much trouble. How many tickets have you gotten so far on for this subject? That wouldn't really be a comment.
I haven't kept count, but I'm on the run, and I'm running out of counties to run to.
Right here in Santa Cruz, how many tickets for scavenging?
Last count.
Really, a lot of tickets.
Yeah.
So you have been targeted again. Now
the police officer didn't give me the ticket. It was the waste management supervisors that said that the cop said he was just the third party, and I know you're not going to stop because you've been doing this a long time, and just don't say anything and sign a ticket.
Well, that could be. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's one way to deal with it, I guess. Well, if you got any further reports, Schema, let us know.
Okay. Only an infraction, and it's a misdemeanor out of the city that's really...
Money. Oh, I went through Wally. Thank you.
Thank you. Another one of those thugs that hangs around.
Did you get my comment about I'm an American citizen of Hawaiian descent, and I have the right to remain silent?
Even if you were an Iraqi citizen of Kuwaiti descent, you would have the right to remain silent. But I hear you. Right on, man.
And what he was talking about by scavenging tickets, that's when you take recycling out of trash cans, put it in your bag, and take it to a recycling center. There's been a crackdown on poor people doing that, supposedly to save the city money, but it sounds like it's actually also a device to drive poor people away.
We are in front of the New Leaf complex in the fenced-off area of the sidewalk. It's about 11 o'clock on July 8th, Tuesday morning. We're talking with
Robert Morgan.
And, Robert, you say that you've had some sneak thief in a uniform approached you and your son recently?
Yes, Nick Danger, Super Ranger, the only John Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
And he absconded with our gear. We're quite certain of it because he was seen doing so. And now we were told we have to go to Felton to gather it again. When he works here, why do I need to jump on a bus to gather my belongings to go to Felton?
When did this happen?
2 days ago.
And where did this happen?
Over off the bike path by China One off Water Street.
And what time of day?
It was we get out early. It was like after 8 in the morning he came by on his shift and gathered our goods and took off in the wind.
What exactly did he take?
My sleeping bag, my Olympic pack, and some personal items that are irreplaceable.
Did he leave any kind of a message, or was there any kind of a warning?
No.
And you say your son also lost some stuff?
Yeah, and my friend Tony also. My son Zachariah had a really nice gear, and he just took it. You know, it's like
at the same time?
Yeah,
or?
He took all three of our gear, just blank. And we had it rolled up tightly and neat and everything. The grounds were clean.
Was it sort of, again, the area where this happened was on a path? Or?
Yeah, it's on a bicycle path. It begins right there off water.
Were you blocking the bicycle path?
Not at all. We were appropriately off the path.
Were there booby traps or possibly unresolved landmines?
Nothing in that area.
Fecal material and needles.
Not either. We used the public facilities when
obscene
all.
Obscene signs or
no,
something?
No gang signs, none of this. No.
Nothing like that?
No, not at all.
Candy, perhaps poisoned, awaiting Halloween for children.
Nothing in that direction.
Nothing like that.
No illegal drugs. No, nothing.
But how do you know it was Wallace? Maybe it had been Sergeant Barry, who works with Wallace, or maybe it was a random homeless person or a house.
Yes, John Wallace was there 2 days before and told us that we needed to relocate. And we said we'd make every effort to find a new camp, or else we would not sleep there at night, or our gear might remain there. He knew this, and he took it.
So you suspect because of that early warning, but otherwise you didn't have any other information?
No.
And now you say that you may be up in Felton. How did you learn this info?
Went to the police department impound, and we were told that his department was in Felton.
So you don't know that it's up there, but you know that if it's up there, it's in Felton.
Right. That's where I'll have to...
give you a chance to a little exercise, a six-mile walk up to Felton.
I'm not going to hitchhike or take a bus up there. I'll get a ride, but it's just an inconvenience. It's just inexcusable. Steal a man's bedding.
Have you heard this happening to anyone else?
Hundreds and hundreds.
Now, let's say in the last few weeks, anything specific?
Oh, yeah, at least 20 people, the same game.
Because I know I was at the...
district judge just found in Fresno in favor of the homeless to set a principle, you know, that they aren't allowed to touch your gear as long as it's not on private property. If it's state-owned, you cannot pick up another person's belongings and abscond with them.
Or if you do, you certainly have to provide for a receipt.
They also won in court.
Store it.
They won in court on several items, like pictures that can't be replaced, jewelry, mementos, things that are irreplaceable.
They can't destroy the property is what was the decision.
They're priceless, and they have to replace and comp those people with money. So it's going to happen here very soon.
Well, that's what we need, actually. You know, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which meets every Wednesday at 9:30 in the basement of the courthouse, in case you happen to show up, wants to get people to go out with cameras to video.
Actually, that's the basement of the county building next to the courthouse. And the guy has it a little bit wrong. They can take property that's on, if it's on public property. In fact, it's illegal to leave your property unattended. That's a new Santa Cruz or an old, two- or three-year-old, four- or five-year-old Santa Cruz ordinance. It's a crime to leave unattended property. Of course, that's an anti-homeless law. But it is also a violation of the Constitution, and it was found to be a tort and inappropriate behavior by authorities to steal homeless property and then destroy it, which is the regular approach of Ranger John Wallace, which he admits freely. He makes no bones about it. When I talked to him a year ago, he said he regularly destroyed homeless property and had been doing so for 5 years. There was a time some years back around the early years of the millennium, 2000, 2001, 2002, when perhaps they weren't destroying, but they were storing homeless property in the Parks and Rec seizures here in Santa Cruz, but not anymore. More with the interview.
Yeah, and take pictures of this or join Labor Ready to be part of the crews that actually come in apparently and reportedly take this stuff.
That's right. They have been assigned to do that job, and they hate it because half the guys who work for Labor Ready are homeless also.
Now, perhaps you'd like to be a part of this campaign to document these kinds of abuses, because in our campaign to end the sleeping ban, the problem we've had is it isn't the same kind of sexy case that when you bring photographs and videos to attorneys and say, here's pictures of dumpsters being filled with homeless property and thrown away, that seems to be evidence of clear violation. Whereas, we know you guys aren't supposed to sleep at night. I mean, come on, show some spunk. Walk around. Get a little exercise.
Sleep during the day in the park.
Exactly. You know, during the day in the park.
And hours to night owl hours. And then they'll have a reason to stop people for no reason at all when you're wandering the street at night homeless.
Well, you can actually act as a sort of a sentinel force downtown.
I have been for years. I've lived here 37 years. More on than off. Owned property in Boulder Creek for 18 of that. And in process right now buying a new home. But until I get through escrow, I'm homeless because I'm not the millionaire. You know? That's the way it is.
A troublemaker, in other words.
No, I'm not a troublemaker. I'm
a sleeper at night, eh? Criminal sleeper, eh?
One eye open. I did two tours in Vietnam.
Well, I hope we can get you and others to document the property that's taken. If you can start making notes as to who lost their property when.
Right.
And also, if you can get some people to get in touch with us at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F.
Okay.
We can, you know, arrange to get people involved with labor-ready crews, and arrange to follow them around with video cameras, and arrange to document the gentle, firm, kindler approach of Ranger John Wallace.
To protect and serve. What happened there?
Well, you know how it is.
I don't find any service in that.
We've been talking with...
I don't find any service in paying someone to accumulate poor people's belongings and deprive them of the most limited things that they need to
serve. You want to take it off your hands.
That's right. Well, they don't want to take it off my hands because I would probably go off. And it wouldn't be nice. It's just one-to-one. Take that 10-star off and we'll dance. I'm 57, but I can still dance.
Yeah, we've been talking with...
Rob Morgan.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Rob.
A couple of positive things to say about some police, Rob.
Right. Some that they have replaced with the older, grumpier, most German Nazi-esque corpulent swine.
But what about Officer Brandt? Officer Brandt, he's still there.
He's good. You know, he's a wonder, isn't he? Anyway, I like several of them, and they are friends with me, and they don't abuse things, you know, because they know I'm not out to break the law. You know, I might get a ticket for smoking in the park. Well, that's stupid, because I'm an adult, and I don't blow smoke at children or women or anything. I sit in my own little square with the other fellow smokers.
It's for your own health, my son. We're trying to help you out.
I remember San Lorenzo Park when you were allowed to take your... I raised two of my sons there. And we could go there and barbecue and drink a cold beer and smoke a cigarette or a joint or whatever. But we were decent about it. We were all, you know, blowing up that place.
You were discreet.
I was a credit to my community.
Well, John Wallace is making sure that you remain a credit to community, preferably 20 miles away from town.
I would like to think that. But I still own 10 acres of Boulder Creek that's vacant, but I'm not moving there to please him or anyone else.
Hear, hear. Again, we've been talking with?
Rob Morgan.
Thanks, Rob.
You're welcome.
Do a theologian, your name, sir?
I'm not a theologian, but my name is A.
And A, you say you've had some incidents on the street that you want to talk about?
I can talk about some incidents, yeah. Like last week when I was walking down the street and the police rolled up with the paddy wagon behind them, stopped, threw my friend on the ground because he was drinking, and they thought he was drinking. It was actually an Arizona can. It had alcohol in it, but by looking at it, it was an Arizona can, but it looks like a Coors can. So they just grabbed him, threw him down. They didn't do any kind of, like, sniff or anything. They just threw him on the ground. And
how many cops?
There were seven of them there. Seven of them. One paddy wagon, two cars, but seven total cops. Mm-hmm. One on a bicycle. And they informed us that if anybody was drinking in public, our whole crew was going to jail. That includes about 13 people, some of us that don't even drink. Some of them don't even drink. I wasn't drinking.
What time of day was
jail.
It?
It's about 3:30.
And what day was it?
See, this was 2 weeks ago, Friday.
Okay, and any particular officers involved that you recognize?
I'm not giving out... Yeah, there is, but if I give out names, there's retribution.
You're afraid you'll be targeted.
There's retribution.
Were sergeants involved or just officers?
There was one corporal and one sergeant.
And was there anybody particular? What you say? How many people were actually approached by the police? How many were you?
12 people were taken to jail that day.
And would you feel there was any justification for anybody being jailed at all?
Yeah, about 3 people were drunk to the point that, see, a drunken public law says that you have to be drunk beyond the point where you can care for yourself. 3 people needed to go to jail.
Right.
The rest of us, no. I had barely had, like, a sip of beer off someone's can.
And how many of you actually went to jail?
All of us.
And how long were you held?
We were held for, I was held 11 hours. Some got out after 6 hours. They're legally allowed to hold you 4 hours, or if you're still messed up, they can hold you 1 extra hour, which makes 5 hours. I've seen people held up to 20 hours.
And were you charged or anything, or simply released?
No, simply released, but it does go on your record, so if you were charged with anything in the future, they can look at it. It's supposed to be dismissed, but they can look at it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Camping ticket, they give us tickets. When people can't afford, there's a federal law that says when people can't afford to pay tickets, it's unfair to write them tickets for what's called Zach, what do they call
life
that?
Life-sustaining misdemeanors?
No, these are usually infractions. They're quality of life violations.
Right.
And if you can't afford... Do you want to hit pause real quick?
Sure.
If you can't afford to pay a ticket, federal law says that you shouldn't be given an infraction ticket because it's abuse of a lower socioeconomic class. Yet they do it anyway because they know the number of the ticket will keep growing so they can eventually jail you. It's demographic cleansing.
Oh, no. And has this happened to you, let's say in the last month, other than this incident with the drunken arrest, or the arrest for three drunks and one person, you were drinking but you weren't drunk?
Yeah, I had one sip off a can of beer.
You are over 21?
I'm 34.
All right. Well, but it's a way of helping you get off alcohol. Think of it that way.
Helping me get off alcohol?
Yes, helping you relive your childhood.
I already lived my childhood, and I'm over 21, and I'm allowed to drink.
What can I say? So, but other than that incident, what else has happened?
I don't know. Every single day the police come up. If I so much as step foot in San Lorenzo Park or Grant Street Park, the police walk up, especially Officer Seeley, Eric Seeley, or Officer Paco, who is a support officer. He wears a light blue shirt. Or Wilson, which is a female cop, wears a light blue shirt. Come up. Tear my backpack off me, tear it apart, every one of us that's sitting there, even like if what I call normal people, like a regular working person, a good societal citizen, you know, they tear their shit apart and throw it all on the ground and throw their clothes, throw my clothes on the ground. You know, it's hard. I'm homeless. It's hard for me to do laundry and keep my clothes clean. I don't need the police coming up and throwing it on the ground because they're looking for a bottle.
Now, do you...
And that's if we're not even misbehaving.
Do you object to these searches? You say, I object to the search, or do they ask permission? Or what do they do?
They do not ask permission. They just do it, and if you object, you get slammed on the ground.
Now, do you have a search clause or probation, parole?
No, I've never been to prison. I don't have no search clause. I've never been on probation. I ain't got none of that.
And it's not thrilling to be searched by the police? A kind of an honor, perhaps?
Well, it's kind of degrading, perhaps.
Kind of. Anything you want to add, A, to this whole account?
Yeah, fuck the police.
Thank you.
And that's it. Those caustic words ends the show. Coming up next, a more mellow scene, perhaps, from the cream to the dregs with Uncle Dennis, who will lead us into a more civilized discussion of ecological and other issues of that sort. Come with me again on Sunday, and we'll wander through the sordid underpath of Pacific Avenue and what the police are up to there. You can also catch me on the Huff Line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, between times, and check out the Human Rights Organization meets 10 o'clock in Loudoun Park on Saturday morning. Thanks. Just
And, of course, on a show that's called From the Cream to the Dregs, why not start off with the cream? That's right. Uncle Dennis here on a Thursday evening, hoping to bring you a few hours of music of the 60s and 70s. Yes, the name of the show is From the Cream to the Dregs. You're listening to it on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. And, of course, you can catch it on the Wide Weird Web at freakradio.org. Well, if you like cream, maybe you'll like some blue cheer.
killer thought, but I believe that I'll be dead. Doctor, don't you turn me down. I want you to hear what I say. I need you. I could live on God, but I need it right away. Well, help me, doctor. Shot inside of me. All right, sing it to me, doctor.